It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is the Fox News Rundown Extra. I'm Lisa Brady. NASA recently smashed into an asteroid, in this case a harmless one, aiming to nudge it off course, a test of how they might one day protect the planet. The Planetary Defense Test was actually launched nearly a year ago, using a SpaceX rocket and a Space Force base in California, as NASA also works to get back to the moon. All of this at a time when many Earthlings are very divided. So we spoke to astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson, director of the Hayden Planetarium at the American Museum of Natural History in New York, and author of the new book, Starry Messenger, Cosmic Perspectives on Civilization. Our conversation was shortly before NASA announced its first-of-a-kind asteroid test had been a success. We made some edits for time and thought you might like to hear the whole thing. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the weekday Fox News Rundown podcast. Now here's Neil deGrasse Tyson on the Fox News Rundown Extra. Before we get to the new book, I wanted to get your take on NASA's recent mission to try to redirect an asteroid, in this case, a harmless one, but it's considered one potential tool to help protect the planet. How ambitious was this?
Oh, yeah. So first of all, it should have happened decades ago. All right. We should be way deeper into this Save the Earth plan than just only starting it in the year 2022. But the DART mission, the Double Asteroid Redirect Test, I think I got the acronym correct there, is an attempt to test a deflection scenario. You know, unlike the way we've all been trained looking at films with Bruce Willis in them, like Armageddon, where let's blow the sucker out of the sky. That's a very sort of militaristic attack on a danger. But while we may be good at blowing things up, we're less good at knowing where the parts go afterwards. So you're way better off deflecting the asteroid if you can, especially if you get to it early enough. Then a tiny little deflection just accumulates, right? It's, you move it like 1 centimeter per second to the left, and it just will keep drifting 1 centimeter per second to the left. You get it early enough, it'll drift the entire width of Earth so that it will not collide if it otherwise had us in its sights. So this is an important test. We're going to see how well it worked and build on what the results are from what we found.
I mean, it still leaves a trail, right? In this case, thousands of miles long, because you smash into it and you're still breaking some pieces off. But I guess we're less concerned about that than if
No. The smashing wasn't to destroy it. The smashing was to nudge it.
Right, but it still leaves a trail.
But the little bits, the pieces that fall off, those would just burn up harmlessly in our atmosphere. That's not, if those somehow manage to intersect Earth's orbit, that those are not what you need to worry about.
That's reassuring.
Yes,
very reassuring. The NASA administrator, Bill Nelson, says they turned science fiction into reality with this test. Sounds like describing it in a way people who aren't scientists can get excited about. Is that something NASA should do more of?
Well, I think they... Okay, so yes, NASA does have a very strong PR arm. But they can't advertise themselves just as a government rule. We see the military advertise themselves, but technically, if you look carefully at those ads, they're recruitment ads. They're not, we're the Army and we're great, be nice to us. It's we're the Army, be one of us, join us. So what NASA could do, but I don't think they do, is create a recruitment ad the way the military does. And that way they get to extol the virtues of what they do as part of the commercial, and at the end say, become a NASA engineer or scientist, or just work any capacity at NASA and be a part of that adventure. So that would, that's the difference here. But yeah, I think pop culture, we're a pop culture place, the United States. And a big part of what I do on my podcast, for example, is merge. I know you walk in the door with a pop culture scaffold. I know you do, because that's the definition of pop culture. You know who Beyonce is. You know who, you know people and places and things. And I have to stay up with that. And then I clad science to your pop culture scaffold. And now you walk away caring more about the science than you would have if it was just presented to you bare. And so, yes, the power to Administrator Nelson to reference our Hollywood science fiction attempts to get this done. Now we're doing it for real.
They have had a series of delays, though, for the first test flight of the new NASA rocket that's supposed to bring humans back to the moon and beyond. First, an engine cooling issue turned out to be a sensor issue, then a liquid hydrogen leak, then the most recent delay from Hurricane Ian. Would these technical issues be considered routine or expected for a project of this magnitude?
If you're doing something you've never, well, we have gone to the moon before, but not with this rocket configuration. And a reminder that the first two or three of these launches will be uncrewed. So that's the start. So yeah, I'm glad they delayed. I'm glad they found something. I'd rather they found something before launch, delayed it to fix it, than to not find it before launch and have it explode. Take a look at the earliest rocket attempts from back in the late 50s and early 60s. They're all over YouTube if you just go down that rabbit hole. And you end up quite spectacular. And the euphemism that the rocket engineers would say is, the rocket didn't blow up. It was just, it was an experiment rich in data. So that was that's how they would convey this fact. I'd have no problems if it's the first time back up, let it take as long as it needs. I'm not in a hurry. It's been 50 years. What kind of a hurry are you in? It's been 50 years, for goodness sake.
Are we destined to militarize space? Is that inevitable at this point, space warfare at some point?
Well, when that phrase is uttered, we think of Star Wars and laser bullets and Death Stars and this sort of thing. Consider that space has been militarized since the beginning. That's what spy satellites are. Yeah, some might be launched by the CIA or the NSA or whatever, and not by the Army. But spy satellites is the militarization of space, period. We've been at it for 60 years. Now that we have a space force, you're thinking about this, okay? Well, what do you think GPS is? No, they're not spy satellites, but they're means of waging warfare on the ground by giving you coordinates of exactly where you are, especially over regions of the world where there isn't a city grid for you to look at, like the desert, like the oceans, like any place that's sparsely inhabited. You don't have any signpost of where you are necessarily, but the GPS gives it to you. So now you find grandma, the directions to grandma's house to avoid traffic on the weekend using GPS, which started as a military project. Oh, by the way, this intersection of military and scientific and cultural, quote, benefits goes way back. In fact, I wrote a whole book on this called Accessory to War, The Unspoken Alliance Between Astrophysics and the Military. It goes back to Galileo and his telescopes, showing it to the Doge of Venice from the clock tower so that they can know the flag flown by a ship. Is it enemy or is it friend 10 times farther away than they otherwise could? The Doge bought a bunch of telescopes from Galileo. Then he could look at the universe in his spare time. So yes, I think it's inevitable. It's the new high ground. And we've been doing it ever since we've been in space. It's not a new question. It's not a new challenge. It's not a new moral problem. Let me put it that way.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in free-fall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
You have a way of seeing things from a different perspective. Is that where your new book, Starry Messenger, comes from? Maybe wanting to walk people through that and help them see things from a different view as well?
Oh my gosh, it is completely that. Oh my God, you just gave the entire commercial for the book. We can stop now. you just said in fewer words than it would have taken me exactly the mission statement of that book. I'm not there to hand you an opinion. I'm not there to jostle you loose from whatever are your ideas or feelings about the world. The role of the book is whatever are your feelings, try to make sure they're as informed as can be. And often, our own opinions are the greatest source of our own bias. So the book is an attempt to show you what this world looks like when you open your eyes to other ways of seeing things. Not simply you're fighting your person on the opposite side of the political spectrum and you're reluctant to meet in the middle. I'm not talking about the middle. I'm not talking about compromise here. I'm talking about a new place to stand, a new vista where you both walk there and then you look back to where you came from and say, oh my gosh, I used to think that. I really thought that was, oh my God, oh, look at this new thing I'm looking at. Oh, I have a new way of understanding my life on this earth and my life as it relates to other people. That is the cosmic perspective. When you ascend, look back on earth and national borders dissolve, and you say, wait a minute, there's a line there and you need a passport to cross that line. Why? Because, oh, the other country worships a different god, sleeps with different people, or has a different skin color, has different distribution of resources, so we have to be enemies of them. We're trained that way from childhood, from the schoolroom globe that's color-coded. Why is it color-coded? Oh, so you know who your friends are and who your enemies are from the beginning. Aliens coming to visit Earth, here they come, they look at her, oh, that's beautiful. Oh, look at that land and oceans and clouds. And they get closer and they find out one species has divided up that land and fought wars over who lived on what side of any line in the sand or who lived on what side of a mountain range or of a river. And they say, what are you guys doing? Why? Oh, well, look how different they are from what? You're all Homo sapiens. The aliens would run straight back home and declare there's no sign of intelligent life on Earth.
Well, and you break it down using science, some of the biggest issues of the day, like race, gender identity, law and order, even vegetarianism versus, eating meat. And when you put it in scientific terms, like we're all Homo sapiens, that seems like the message you're really hoping to reinforce. We are all part of the same species.
Yes, we're part of the same species. Not only that, we have strong genetic overlap with other species of life on Earth. Just keep context there. One example I give, again, I just want you to be better informed. That's all. And if you're a scientist, you try to find out what your own biases might be. You're looking for bias in others, and you try to not have bias. Because if you have bias, it is an inaccurate understanding and interpretation of the objective world around you. And how are you going to make decisions that are properly informed about your own health, wealth, or security for your loved ones or anything else you do in life? So I'll give an example. Let's say you're a vegetarian because you just don't like killing animals. No one is going to stop you from that. Okay, I get that. So what do? You buy a humane mousetrap and you put it in your basement. You don't want to snap the neck of a mouse. That's cruel. Okay, I get that. So you trap the mouse. You got to check on it every couple of days so they dry out real quick. Then you go and you re-release it into the wild and you feel good about that. Do you know for having done so, you have doomed the fate of that mouse to be eaten by an owl, a hawk, any mid-sized predator bird, okay? Or any woodland foxes. It is tasty grub for all manner of woodland predators. The average life expectancy of a mouse in the wild is between 9 months and about a year and a half. So the best thing you could do for the mouse is leave it in your basement. Because it'll live up to 6 years there. Mice in captivity live long, happy lives. So you don't really want to save the life of the mouse. There's something in you that say, I don't want to be responsible for killing it. And you want to transfer that to the owl. Okay. But just be self-aware. You are dooming the mouse to a shorter life. Meanwhile, you live in a house made from the wood of 50 trees. Trees, each one could have lived 100 years, but was cut down earlier. A tree gives oxygen. Every one of those trees gives 15 times the mass in oxygen of that mouse that you just saved. And the tree is home to birds and insects and fungus and squirrels. Who do you think nature cares more about? Your 1 ounce chubby mouse or the tree? But no, you're a vegetarian and you eat plants, okay? So somehow, so you're basically a species bigot by protecting animals on your side of the tree of life and have no hesitation cutting down others for you to live in with the 2x4s and the floorboards and the structural members. So I'm saying you can keep doing what you're doing, but just be self-aware that probably nature cares more about the tree than about your mouse.
You do have a quote near the beginning of the book from Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar D. Mitchell about the view from the moon and how petty international politics look from up there. And you say at one point, the world doesn't revolve around us or our opinions. What feedback do you get from people when you put things in perspective in this kind of a way?
Well, the title of the book, Starry Messenger, comes from Galileo. He wrote a book, Starry Messenger, 1610, 1609, which had his first observations of the sky with a telescope. And so why did he call it Starry Messenger? Oh my gosh, because he was discovering things that was changing our perspective and our understanding of our relationship to each other and our relationship to everything else on Earth. But yes, Copernicus had said maybe Earth is in the center of the known universe, but nobody had good data yet until he put it on the table. So this, the star is telling us that you are not you are neither the figurative nor the literal center of the known universe, as was previously held, not only by general population, but by the Catholic Church. It was a very important religious tenet that this be true. And so these are messages, you have to contend with that, because it's objectively true. Yes, I guess you can still live in a delusional world, but be self-aware, because decisions you make, as I said earlier, might not be in the interest of your own survival if they're not based on something that is foundationally true. So this cosmic perspective, which was captured brilliantly by Edgar Mitchell, and I want to thank his daughter for giving me permission to you. He died a few years ago, to use that quote. He goes out and he says, you see Earth from 250,000 miles out. You want to grab a politician by the scruff of the neck and say, look at that, you son of a bitch. Okay. This, can I say that? I don't know. Can I say that? It's a podcast, right? You read it and you just feel anyone who reads it feels the same way, that there's stuff going on Earth that just looks so petty and so pointless, that this cosmic perspective has the power to reset, rebalance, reinterpret everything you thought fully justified why you hate another person walking by you.
Well, Neil deGrasse Tyson, astrophysicist, director of the Hayden Planetarium, author of Starry Messenger, Cosmic Perspectives on Civilization, we always appreciate your perspectives and your insight. And thank you so much for your time.
I'm happy. Thanks for having me. I'm sorry I was screaming at you for parts there, but that's where it's coming. You started it.
You're passionate. It's a beautiful thing.
No, the universe is a passionate place. So I'm just living in it like the rest of us.
Thank you so much. Best of luck the book.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.